Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, griefsters. Hope you're having an okay week. There is lots of background noise at the moment because outside is noisy. I've been waiting for ages to record this and it hasn't got any quieter. So apologies for the strange noises in the background. Thank you so much to everyone who came to Latitude to see the Griefcast live we did there. It was so much fun. I'll be putting that episode out in the autumn. Just a reminder, I know I keep doing this, but we do have two more live episodes coming up. We're at the London Podcast Festival on September the 15th, and we're at St Guy's and St Thomas's Hospital in association with their palliative care team on September the 26th. So I tweeted the link about both of those, so have a look on the Twitter. Twitter, of course, is at the Griefcast and on Instagram. And if you are enjoying the show, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe and all those things that every podcast tells you to do. It's much, much, much appreciated. This week I'm talking to stand-up Olga Koch. Olga was nominated for Best Newcomer last year. She's also one of the finalists of the Muse Moose competition and the Leicester Square New Comedian of the Year. And she is an extremely funny lady. Olga has an Edinburgh show coming up this year called If/When as well. So you can see her this year in Edinburgh. Olga is originally from Russia, and she came in to talk to me about her grandmother, Galina, who died in Moscow when a lot of her family were not in Russia. Here's her story. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with comedian Olga Koch. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Did I say that right? I always panic about the name.
It's completely fine. There is no right or wrong way to pronounce it.
Is it? And it's Russian?
It's German.
It's German. I was going to say, it doesn't sound like German. And it doesn't have, what does it mean?
Koch.
Like in German?
Yeah.
It means cock.
Oh, no, cook.
Oh, yes. Cook. Sorry. I was like, wow, cock means cock. Sure. Cook. Of course it does. Sorry, so I did Olga's, German GCSE and it's all coming back to me.
There you go. Yeah. Olga is like the most common Russian name, and Koch is one of the most common German last names.
Right.
Wow. So it's being, like a Pierre Gonzalez.
Right. Oh, nice. Yeah. So you were born in Russia. Mm-hmm. Whereabouts in Russia?
I was born in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Oh, nice, nice.
And then as a kid, I moved to Moscow. Wow. And then when I was 13, I moved here.
So you've lived in England since you were 13?
I moved to the US for university, but then I moved back here.
Wow, amazing. And when did you start comedy?
I started comedy at university when I was about 19.
And did you so have you always done your comedy in English?
Yes. So, like, I've tried doing comedy in Russian and it just does not work.
Really?
At all.
Do you think that's because your formative years weren't there?
Yeah, like I kind of find Russian stuff funny, but also my sense of humor is definitely not Russian in the least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were just talking about my sister-in-law, who's Japanese, has a very English sense of humor.
Yeah.
And although she likes Japanese stuff too, but to be fair, because she's listening. But yeah, it's weird that cultural. But it must be like your fault, like you said, like things that you like as a teenager really do form your humor, don't they?
Big time. Because you're like super obsessed and hormonal when you're a teenager.
Yes.
So whatever you consume in that very moment just defines you for the rest of
your life. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. It's like it's why we've got to be careful what our teens listen to. That's why we've got to be careful, guys. Because it's pretty influential. Because Eddie Izzard, of course, does shows, you know, he's English and he's done shows in French and German and he's doing a show in Spanish, I think. Mm-hmm. And I always think that's my biggest thing is like, it's not just the language, is it? It's being able to like the subtleties of that sense of humor and stuff.
I have no idea how he does it because it's not just a straightforward translation. Obviously, like the most basic thing is wordplay won't work.
But
then like inflections, also like word order. I kind of speak German and like the word order just like there's. You can't have a reveal the way that you can have a reveal in English because you start with the reveal.
I've never thought about that
in
German.
Yeah.
Oh my God. See, my German GCSE is hanging in there. But of course, you start with the reveal.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you think, I think that's so fascinating about language and culture. Like, that says so much about German culture and English culture. Like, so much of, like, our humour is about, like, you don't know, you don't know. Hello, you know.
Yeah.
And German humour is, here is the joke. Now it is funny.
Now let me explain how we got there.
Yeah, It's so, like, your language reflects the culture. Obviously, big statements from Carrier today. Language reflects culture. I'll be back with my cultural podcast. So what happened when you did it in Russian? Did it just...
So I did it once in Russian.
Oh, yeah.
And I was stupid enough to just translate things directly. And
yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, I don't have that much wordplay in my act. And then once I was doing it directly in my head, I was like, oh, I have so much wordplay in my act. I didn't even realize. And then some of it I feel, so I know Russian, in terms of the amount of words that I know in Russian, I know more because it is my first language. So, like, the bank is bigger.
It's full.
But with English, it's more readily available because I talk in English every single day. So it takes me, like, a fraction of a second to think of a Russian word. And that's just really, it just crams my style.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't think, like, especially because obviously you're completely bilingual. But there is that fraction of a second.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. And my sister-in-law has it sometimes because she speaks more English these days. When she's having to go back to Japanese, I see her sometimes going, oh, what's the word for that in Japanese? Because she hasn't had to... Yeah, your brain's just searching around, being like, oh, I never need the word for television right now.
Sometimes I'll be speaking to my parents and I'll say a word and I'm like, I haven't said that word in 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so funny, isn't it? This is brilliant, Ogun. I think we should start our own podcast.
About
language and culture. Although, actually, there's one called The Illusionist, which is brilliant and is basically that podcast. But who are we remembering today?
We are remembering my grandmother, Galina.
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 I love that name. Galina. That's so nice. Is that Russian?
It is Russian.
Oh, that's a beautiful name. What's her full name? Go on, give us a full Russian.
Galina Dmitrievna Knyazeva.
Oh, my God. My inner Chekhov just got very happy and then left the room very sad, obviously, because it's an inner Chekhov. God, Galina, that's a beautiful name. I do have a thing for Russian language. I just think it's so beautiful. Yeah, amazing. So how long ago did Galina die?
She passed away in the fall of last year, which is quite recent.
Very recent. Yeah, yeah. How old was she?
She was 85, I believe.
I mean... Yeah, still sad. It doesn't matter.
Oh, the age thing.
But just to get the picture in our head. Galina, 85. So where was she when she died? Was she here or?
So she was in St. Petersburg.
She was in St. Petersburg. Okay.
She was in St. Petersburg with my grandfather.
Right.
And she fell. And then she was in a hospital for a broken leg. And then they operated on her. And then she couldn't recover from the operation.
Oh.
I mean, I know that she died painlessly in her sleep. I think that was like the way to go. And I remember now, especially I'm doing a little bit of material about it on stage. And I talk about how one of my friends, her grandmother is 104.
Yeah.
And she hates being in the retirement home because nobody gets her references because they're all in their 80s.
No way.
No, that's like me hanging out with like a newborn and just being like, have you seen the memes? Like, obviously, they're like, there's generations between
of
them.
Course.
But we just think old people are old.
They're the same. They're all old.
Which is, it's absolutely not the case. Okay, so
that's hilarious that she's like, oh, remember the Wall Street crash, guys? No. We're talking about the war here. Oh, God.
Shut up, Grandma.
Yeah, so old. God, that's so fascinating. And says so much about how we just treat, like you said, old people as like one unit.
Yeah.
Like once they get grey hair and they can't move very well.
It's
like,
really unfair.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. So yeah, you were saying like she didn't have to go through that, obviously.
Right. And she had my grandfather who absolutely adores her. But I think essentially that in itself, the event, I think if anything, we all were happy with the way that it went because like her health was deteriorating and like I visited her, my sister visited her. We all were with her in the last days. It was fine. I think that the most heartbreaking thing about everything was that basically my parents are political asylums in Germany.
Wow.
So when she got sick and she broke her leg, my mom couldn't go visit her. So she was in Germany just like listening and Skyping in.
Mm.
And so when we had the funeral, my mom couldn't attend. So like I was in a surreal situation where I was at this funeral, literally FaceTiming my mom into the funeral of our own mother.
Oh my God.
And it was honestly the most heartbreaking thing that I could have witnessed just because my mom kept calling me and saying, I can't get closure because like I couldn't. She was fine with it happening, but she wasn't there. And that was just terrifying. Just because, and so frustrating because it was such a man-made obstacle.
Yeah. It's not like, oh, the heavens open and couldn't get there. The plane didn't land. It's like, yeah, no, some bureaucrats made a choice and that means you can't see your mum die. Fuck, so, okay.
Sorry.
No, it's amazing. Not amazing, but you know what I mean? Like, don't apologize. So how did they end up in Germany? What happened there?
So they...
If you can talk about it.
Oh, I mean, essentially, this is like my Edinburgh show was about this, about how my father was in politics. Then he became like part of the opposition and then he had to leave.
Wow.
Because he's wanted in Russia. And so my mom went with him and they can't go back because like she's a key witness. And then like it's just it is very unsafe for them to go. And so my mom hasn't been to Russia since 2014, I don't think.
Wow.
And so when this was happening, so like up until a point, my grandparents would visit them and that was like how they kept in touch.
Yeah.
But then towards the end, my grandmother couldn't visit. And it was just crazy because it was when I visited my grandparents when she was sick towards the end, I went into the flat and I opened drawers that my mom hadn't opened in like over 4 years because she thought she'd come back. So she had a room in my grandmother's flat. So it was kind of like a time capsule of all this stuff that like notes that my mom left because she had to leave practically overnight when everything was happening with my dad. So I was like, I walked into this time capsule of my mom who left my grandmother's flat in like, in a way that like, oh, I'll return in a couple of weeks because they were very, very close. And so I remember walking into this like, it was like a time machine of seeing my mom before everything happened, before she had to basically run away to Germany. There's all this stuff, like half open lipsticks. And it was just like, it was crazy just because you thought, oh, what is happening here? And then I would walk into my grandmother's room and that's everything that she left when she broke her hip and like went to the hospital.
Oh.
So it was like her stuff was still on the floor. And it was just a museum that you would just walk around and me and my sister just felt like it was like full of ghosts. It was such a surreal experience.
So they only moved to Germany like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So that happened quite recently.
Yeah.
I see. Okay, yeah, because I was thinking because you've been here longer. So yeah, so it was kind of, oh, okay. So kind of recent Russian politics, which I imagine, is a, let's use the phrase shitstorm.
Yeah, like, very much so.
Yeah. So they had to just very suddenly overnight, it wasn't safe for your father to be there and your mum followed him to Germany. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that must have been so crazy for you to go into that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I just can't.
I was in university in America at the time. So it was like a thing happening. It almost was in a movie that like I lived my life without it. And then sometimes I would dial in into the Bond novel and just be like, oh, what? And then I'd hang up and like go drinking with my friends. And it was just this thing that you could like a shell that you could occasionally put your ear to and just be like, oh, what's going on now? What's that now?
Was it strange being in America at that time as well? Like being a Russian in America with your father being involved and in a place where Russian politics is, you know, has featured so heavily recently and in the past. How did it feel being there?
It was only recent because 2014 was still Obama in office and Trump wasn't around and all that stuff wasn't as...
Oh, heady days. Imagine that.
Yeah, so it wasn't as... It was one of those things where I remember that when I was living in Russia, Russians like hated America. Yeah. And then I remember visiting in America and people did not give a shit about Russians.
Yeah.
They just like didn't even cross their mind. Only now is like Russia kind of in the public consciousness.
Yeah, that's
of
true.
Americans.
Yeah. It's Russia's got a lot more trending. It's been trending a lot more lately.
Thank God for that I got my Edinburgh show in.
Yeah. So your grandma, you find out she's broken her leg.
Mm-hmm.
When did you go? Were you living in England then? So you could go, you just flew to Russia.
Yeah.
So you can go into Russia, no problem.
I mean, it's a gray area. I don't know. But it was kind of like, of course I wasn't going to not go.
Yeah. And when you were in the flat, did you FaceTime your mom in the flat to show her stuff? Or were you just
I remember we did. She left so many clothes there. When my grandmother was still sick, so we thought that she was going to get better. We did a fashion show of all these things. Like me and my sister did a fashion show of the stuff that my mom left there. I kind of want to give context for my grandmother.
Yeah,
if that's okay.
Yeah.
So essentially she was this absolutely heroic, badass woman. So she was a daughter. Her mom, is the word pronounced siege? Sieg? S-I-E-G-E?
S-I-E-G-E. Siege. Yeah,
siege.
Sorry.
So the
dyslexic.
Siege of Leningrad.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
when that was happening.
Yeah.
World War II meant that they basically blocked out the whole city and no one could leave. And there's these horrible stories about how people would cannibalize other people because there's nothing to eat.
Yeah,
it was just awful. And so my grandmother escaped Leningrad as that was happening.
Whoa.
And they would only let kids on the train because everyone of working age had to stay. So when she was 7 years old, she said goodbye to her mom, and her mom died in the siege of Leningrad while on a train went to her grandparents. And her dad at the time was an officer. And just population statistics-wise, in Russia after World War II, when we lost almost 20 million people, because the Soviet government had no value for human life, there was just statistically significantly fewer men to women.
Yeah.
And so when he was one of the only survivors, and he was an army officer, covered in medals, he was bye, Galina, and he just slept around with a bunch of women.
Right.
And
right.
So she
there's so few of me.
Exactly.
What could I do?
I can't say no.
At least I could do for my population.
Exactly.
Okay.
So essentially she was completely abandoned, and she was living with abandoned by her parents. She was living with her mom's parents to the point where she started calling them mom and dad.
Wow. You know when you hear about your grandparents pass and you just you can't deal with how intense the past is sometimes.
Yeah.
You're like nowhere in your life is getting on a train at seven and a siege happening in your town.
Exactly.
You're whoa. Yeah. It's just crazy, isn't it? Yeah. So she's living with her grandparents.
She's living with her grandparents. Then she goes to Moscow, goes to university, and then works up to being the head of the fish processing plant in St. Petersburg. And she's every story that I hear of her of the time was she's a mafioso. She had connections everywhere because in the Soviet Union, instead of money, you had connections, right?
Yeah.
Because she controlled the fish supply, she would call any restaurant and she'd be like, do you want bad fish or do you want good fish?
How's the fish looking? It's Galina. You know what I'm saying. Table by the window. Wow, that's amazing.
So she would get my mom the prettiest dresses. She would get my mom tights, and tights was a huge thing back then.
Wow.
So, and then she...
Because it sounds like an unglamorous job, right? Fish processing, but you're no, she thought smart.
Yeah.
Everybody wants fish.
Exactly.
That's smart thinking. Oh, my God.
The gatekeeper of fish.
Yeah.
And she married... So my grandfather is one of her subordinates who was an engineer at the at the plant. So she was this person who was completely self-made to the point where she was completely alone.
Yeah.
And then she just built this life for herself. And she held a huge grudge against her dad for her whole life because he did nothing for her. And then I think on his deathbed, he was oh, Galina. And she very, very openly didn't go to his funeral because she's this man did nothing for me and I will not,
not
pay my respects. So my mom went to this guy's funeral, even though my mom had no idea who this guy was, kind of. They were not close. And Galina was I'm not going.
That's funny. So that your mom went to her
exactly
like you did.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even draw that.
Yeah,
that parallel.
That's kind of funny that she was also there as the grandchild.
You skip a generation, essentially.
Yeah. Funerals. God, that's amazing. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So carry on.
Sorry. So she was, and her whole life, she was every time, one of the things, at the funeral, there was a few people who kind of knew her. And one of the things that people said, she was very kind, she was very nice, and she always gave back a debt. If she ever borrowed money from anyone, she would give every ruble back. Ruble reference.
Yes. I love it. I'm very happy with the ruble reference.
So she was this kind of strong woman, and she was a strong woman until she died. I even in the hospital, my grandfather, like, wanted her attention more than she wanted his. Mm. Like, the last week, he would be like, oh, are you okay? Are you okay? She's like, I'm fine.
I'm good, Lee Millen.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. So are your memories of her when you were a child growing up, were you very close to her?
I think at the very beginning, I wasn't, because I did find her quite intimidating just because she wasn't a kid person at all.
Yeah. She's a tough lady.
As you can imagine.
She had to stop being a child at 7. So yeah, I imagine before you were 7, she didn't really know what to do with you.
She's
like,
what are dolls?
Yeah.
She's like, do you want to talk about fish? Call me when you want to talk about fish.
I can get you good fish. Okay? I can get you good dresses, tights, and good fish. I'm not dealing with toys right now. God, yeah, that's
so intense.
Tell me
when you want to know the difference between sea bass and carp.
I said, that's such an intense... I mean... Obviously, the whole living in the Soviet Union at that time, it's just so intense, isn't it? Like, it's mind-boggling, isn't it, still? And what's happening now? So what happened was you got older then? Did you kind of sort of suss out, this woman's actually quite pretty cool?
Oh, yeah. I got so much closer to her. And I think I used to, generally, I think, okay, I don't, no, I'm not making any sweeping generalizations about Russians, especially since I haven't lived there for a very long time.
Yeah.
But for me, I thought... My parents were on the cusp of a generation that the Soviet Union was dismantled and they were young enough to take advantage of it, right?
Yeah.
Some people didn't, some people did. Some people liked it, some people didn't like it, obviously. And they were like, this is freedom. We get to, like, listen to whatever music we want, watch whatever movies we want, go all over the world. Like, this is freedom. And the older generation was kind of like, we're going to keep voting for the Communist Party. We want everything to go back to the way it was. And I used to think that they wanted things to go back to the way it was, or they were unhappy with everything because they were like... old and lame.
Yeah.
But then my parents were like, they spent, my grandparents' generation spent their whole lives trying to game this system.
Yeah.
And she did everything in her power to get to live well in this system.
Yeah.
And then imagine when you're like 50 or whatever, someone's like, everything you spent your whole life working towards is just worthless.
Yeah.
Right? The money isn't worth anything. Your connections aren't worth anything. The fact, like, nothing is worth anything. So yeah, of course it's frustrating that, like, it's not that they cared about the ideology. They just lived their whole life learning to game a system that wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, God, I've never thought of it like that. That's absolutely... Because, yeah, of course, if you're a hustler and you're a survivor, you're like, okay, I see communism. I'm going to work... how I'm going to work this. And
exactly.
Then you're looking around at your peers, and if they're at the same level, you're going, yeah, we know the good the fish.
Yeah.
We know who to call.
Yeah.
You know the good vegetables. We've worked this out.
Yeah.
And then someone just takes it all away and goes, oh, by the way, it was worthless. You're like, fuck you.
Exactly.
It wasn't fucking worthless.
Exactly.
We were doing okay. Like,
she was never a communist. She was just like, I want to provide for my family.
Yeah.
And then at some point she couldn't, and everything that she did, like going to university and surviving by herself since the age of 7, just wasn't worth anything.
I mean, we're getting so deep. But this is the thing with, like, revolution.
Yeah.
And, like, of course, you know, every time something is overturned, I always think this, like, we throw everything away instead of going, hang on, are there some good things?
Yeah.
Grab the good things. Like, but, you know, like you said, when someone has to leave quickly, like, your mom's like, you don't grab stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You just think, okay, well, I'll be back, you know. So you just chuck out communism. Just chuck it out. Check it out, guys. I'm sure we'll sort it out. And then, like, they just throw out everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, I mean, I can't, it's such a fascinating history to come from. But yeah, your poor grandma, it must be hard.
I feel in retrospect, she probably had an identity crisis just because she was so used to being in control of everything in her life, to the point that where her husband was a subordinate at work. She was in control of everything in her life. And for something so big to happen, I feel she really, like, kind of started feeling powerless.
Yeah. And I think you're right, because if you have worked out how to play that system, it must be really hard to be like, that probably wasn't an easy lesson she had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
She must have got screwed over and had shit happen to her, and she climbed her way up.
Yeah,
I really feel for Galina right now. I'm like, God, that must be hard. It's just interesting as well. I'm trying to draw a comparison. Maybe it's unfair, but like, it's unfair comparison, as you said, to make generalizations. But it's just at this time of Brexit, when you can feel like this thing, just everyone going, no, just throw everything away, and you're just like, can we just hang on a sec, I just wonder if not everything's shit, like, can we just go, please don't throw it in the bin, like,
right.
Please just don't throw it in the bin,
right,
because then it'll get covered in pasta sauce, so like, just take it out, let's just calmly talk about it before we throw everything away. That is absolutely fascinating.
Because it's so easy to think of everything high level because you don't have the time to get into the nitty gritty of it. But the nitty gritty of it was like the majority of the population was just not just not equipped for it.
Yeah.
Either like mentally, financially in any way.
Well, it also, it's almost really, which is obviously never going to happen, but it's like, you need to give counselling to a generation.
Yeah.
Like those people need counselling to cope with what's the grief of what's happening to them right now. Like it's the loss. It's a loss of everything they believed in culturally. And you've just gone, it's gone, but you're free. Why aren't you happy? You can watch a film. What's wrong with you, Grandma? Yeah. You could listen. You could listen to Take That right now. I mean, what is wrong with you? And she's like, not that happy, guys. So was there tension with your grandma and your mum, that generation? Or was she kind of always, sounded like she was very supportive, like...
No, I don't think they were very, very close. And I think especially with time, my mom became more and more grateful for everything that my grandmother did. It's just a very interesting thing, just again, like, because... She just passed away. We're revisiting her history. And it's really interesting because she was quite modest and collected her whole life. Mm. And then my dad's side of the family are kind of like flashy and kind of like, I got A's. I got an A. Like they're kind of like, oh, let's write a musical about how I got all A's in high school. So me and my sister were always kind of convinced that like my dad's side of the family are the smart ones and my mom's side of the family are kind of the dumb dumbs.
Yeah.
And then looking back and we're like, oh, our grandmother was a genius. Yeah. She graduated with like all A's, but she just never talked about it. And my dad, so it just kind of like revisiting your genes and thinking, oh, they're just a bunch of show-offs.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it? Because I think when you're a kid or when you're a teenager, you make decisions about everyone.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, they're that.
Yes.
And they're that. And I'm like them.
Yes.
And then you get older, you're like, what?
Yep.
That makes a lot more sense now. I accept that maybe they weren't what I thought they were. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. And I think we just make these very definite decisions.
Because you're drawn to the fun parent or the fun grandparent. And even though you're like, oh, wait a second, maybe the fun grandparent... is the weirdo because all they want to do is hang out with a six-year-old.
Yeah, there is that. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, my grandpa...
Get friends your own age, Grandpa.
Yeah, I've talked about my grandpa a lot, who I adored. My dad's dad, I literally thought he was the cleverest, most wonderful man ever. And then you do remember things, you're like, yeah, I mean, he was very sexist, wasn't he? He was real... The way he talked to waitresses was not okay, was it? Like, but at the time, like, he's so funny and all these ladies like him. Yeah, all the ladies. All the ladies. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, that makes... Yeah, when you're a kid, you're an idiot. You don't know, do you?
That makes perfect sense.
This seems fun. Everyone's smiling. They're not. They're all deeply unhappy.
Oh.
So... Your grandma, I guess, kind of seemed like this forbidding figure. Like, you know, obviously, because you said she was quite intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was all this other stuff going on behind her. I mean, also, perhaps you don't want to talk about when you've survived the siege of Leningrad. Perhaps you don't want to go into it.
Like, probably not.
You don't want to talk to your grandchildren about, like, oh, you want to really hear what I saw when I was 7? Like, yeah, it must have been. Did you ever talk to your mum about it?
Yes.
Wow.
And I think with my mom, I think they got closer towards the end of my grandmother's life. But with my mom, she's like, she provided everything for me, but she was not necessarily like a very emotional person.
Yeah. And, oh God, how could she?
Well, obviously.
Like, what she's been through. Yeah, yeah.
And my mom did feel, is the term latchkey kid? I think
that's
latchkey,
the name. Yeah, latchkey. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where it's like, yeah, you just let yourself in and no one's really at home because they're working. Yeah.
I only heard that term like last year and I was like, I want to use it in a sentence and here I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's been always a mystery, kind of a mystery. And it was very sobering to see this person who was always just this cool, calm and collected lady be vulnerable towards the end of her life. And like she was trying to maintain, to be graceful and to maintain poise up until her very last moments.
Wow.
And like one of the most chilling moments of the whole thing, because like when we got to Skyping from the funeral at that point, like my comedian brain kind of kicked in and I was like, we need to acknowledge the absurdity of the fact that like Apple is now sponsoring this funeral. And like my mom is seeing me in 4K and telling me I'm wearing too much makeup. Like it was just surreal how we were in the year 2018 where you could see a better image of me at this funeral than you would like
face
in real life.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the political state of the world is at such a point where you can't physically be there.
God, that's mad.
Which is like, imagine traveling in time and telling someone in the past that. They'd be like, what?
Oh,
why
my
just
God.
Go there?
Imagine you go to communist Leningrad and be like, guys, guess what's going to happen here in a while? You'd be like, no way. Like, oh my God, that's crazy.
Yeah. So that was already like kind of absurd and a bit funny to the point where I'm not kidding. This actually happened. We showed my grandfather the phone and we said, talk to mom. And in our head, mom is our mother, where my sister's. But yeah. In his head, mom is the mother of his child.
Yeah, yeah.
So he looked at it and he thought he was talking to Galina. And he looked in the phone and he said, well, I'm not trying to join you anytime soon, but rest in peace.
What were you guys like? No. Oh, God. He doesn't understand phones. Yeah. It's a lot to take on board.
Well, yeah, because in his head, like, that technology totally exists. Yeah, I guess. Because yeah. He's like, I guess it's tech.
I guess that's what the kids are up to these days. You can talk to heaven. Who am I? I've lived through communist Russia. What? Anything can happen, guys. Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Uh-huh.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
So at the funeral, did you speak? What's a Russian funeral? Was it like...
So she was in the hospital then. There was like so much paperwork. And it's crazy how... First of all, there's gatekeepers everywhere. Yeah. And they're like, obviously you have to have this piece of paper. And like, what do you mean obviously? How many people do you think we're burying weekly? And so the other thing being...
you know the process. No, we don't.
And I remember watching this video, and I think it's called the wedding tax or something, where if you do something once in your lifetime, you don't know what it's supposed to cost. Like if I tell you how much a wedding dress is, if I tell you it's £500 or £5,000, you'd be like, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they do that in wedding, everything's £1,000.
Right.
So everything's either £2,000 or £3,000.
Like crazy. Yeah. But also if I'm like buying a casket, I have no idea what my casket's meant to cost. If you tell me it's £200 or £2,000, I'd be like,
okay.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not really buying caskets on the reg. So thankfully my sister did most of the admin because she does still live in Russia. And I remember we were picking her up. We were picking my grandmother's body at the morgue. And so I remember just walking into all these doors and they're like, obviously go to this other door, obviously go to this other door. At which point I'm like, I am on my fifth door because everybody keeps sending me to a different door. And I open this fifth door and there's just these like dead old ladies all over because it's the morgue. And this person just drinking tea and they're like, hey, hello, how can I help you? And I'm just like, this person's obviously so desensitized to dead bodies that this is like, they're just having a tea. And I'm just like, I've just lost a grandmother. I'm just looking at all these dead people and I'm like, oh my goodness. Some of them are naked. It was just.
How did you get as far as the morgue? I don't think you'd get to the morgue. I don't know. I've never had to do it, but like, I don't think you'd get into the morgue.
Because I guess are they taken to the funeral home? Because I don't think funeral homes, they either don't exist in Russia or they do and we just chose not to use one.
Sure, could happen.
So it was like morgue to cemetery right away.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so we went to the morgue and they were like, no, pick her up in this room. And they come into this room and the room is just the highest ceilings I've ever seen, like a church almost, completely covered in marble, no windows. And there's just these kind of shelves. And there's shelves all over that are also marble, and you see that they're wide enough for caskets to be on them.
Yeah.
And there's not one casket, there's only one. And so, and it's a tiny one, because I guess she got much smaller with age.
Yeah.
And so in this huge room, there's this tiny, tiny casket. And in the proportions of the room, it looks like a box.
Yeah.
And so I look into it and I'm like, that's not her. And I leave. And then my sister looks at it and she's like, it is her. They just did a very terrible job of like restoring her face in the formaldehyde or whatever it's called. And I have to look at it and I'm just like, I just don't recognize her. It doesn't look like her.
Oh, my God.
And because they did her hair. I guess they either didn't look at a photo or whatever. They did her hair wrong. They like put too much in, so she looked really stretched out. So even when I remember showing her to my, I mean, it would be hilarious if it's like, well, it wasn't her.
Your mom's like, guys, wrong. You know, you said it's small. It's the wrong casket. Yeah.
And it was, she didn't look anything like herself. It was really weird because we were kind of mourning this person, but that person looked nothing like her.
That must be so strange. Because I guess like, I mean, you can choose here, I think, because obviously here, like, sometimes you don't have open casket and you don't have to have all the stuff, but I think you have to have some chemicals, obviously, because they're not being buried in the ground straight away. But, you know, they can do hair and makeup. They don't have to. But, it's a quite sensitive job, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I guess they just were not paying attention that day.
Given, like, their attitude in that room that I walked in on, they were just, like, having a nice time. I mean, in an also just a really low-brow kind of not as profound sense. I also just finished the TV show that was around that time, like The Haunting of Hill House. Have you heard?
Oh, I'm too scared, but yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's terrifying. But there was a mortician is one of the.
Oh, God.
And so I was like, and both me and my sister just finished that TV show. Obviously, not in order to then bury
my brother. Yeah. We got to watch this first, guys.
So we were all just like, they did it wrong. They used the wrong chemicals. We're trying to be like doing like expert chat, just lifting.
We've watched Haunting of Hill House. Yeah. So we should talk to those guys.
Lifting dialogue.
Oh my God. Were you just anything? You're clinging. You're like, the formaldehyde must have been bad. Like, we've seen people talk about it. So then you go to the, what is it, crematorium or was it a church or?
No, then we put her in a car, which there's a name for that type of car.
Oh, the hearse.
The hearse.
Hearse, yeah.
Thank you very much. So much vocab.
Yeah.
This episode. And then we took her to the church of the cemetery. We had a service, even though I don't think she was particularly religious again, because religion in the Soviet Union wasn't really a thing. Though I do think she got gradually more religious with time, and I don't know whether it was like the identity crisis that pushed it, or because it was like exciting because it was a forbidden fruit in the Soviet Union, like that was kind of a manifestation of freedom.
We can go to church, guys. We can sing those hymns again. Wow, yeah.
Or they were like, we need a cult of personality of someone.
Yeah. So,
please, anyone.
Please. All right, God, fine. We'll take him. Just somebody, some guy I can put a picture on my wall.
Exactly. Just replace it.
Yeah, it's making me feel nervous. Oh my God, that's
someone watching over me.
Did you go to the burial? Did you see that? Yeah.
So we did that. And it was just really interesting to see all these people, like looking at it almost as from a business perspective, because you just see so many like of these gatekeepers and so many people who have like, this is the business of cremation, this is the business of selling flowers there, this is the business of the church, this is the business of like, there's these guys who just like rocked up and they were shirtless and it was
I'm sorry though.
Yeah, they were shirtless because like all what they do all day is just bury people.
Dig
and
the
so
hole.
They're all sweated up and I was like, what is this like music video? Because they're obviously again super desensitized because it's like they're 10th body that day.
Yeah.
So they're like, did you say goodbye? They literally just like rocked up. They look like the gang of guys from Greece. They rocked up with like shovels and they were like, you guys done? Did you say goodbye? I'm like, yeah. And then they just completely shirtless, these muscular dudes just start shoveling ground on top of my grandma.
Wow.
And they're like, all right, peace out. And they just like run off. It was just so surreal.
My God, That's so surreal. Wow. Yeah, I think I sometimes think I don't have enough knowledge to explain it culturally, but like, I lived in France for a tiny amount of time. And I noticed in Paris, they still have, like you said, gatekeepers and shopkeepers. This idea of like these businesses. There's a shop that just sells nails.
Yeah.
It just sells nails.
Yeah.
And I get the thing with England, like we used to have that and we have just streamlined everything.
Oh,
and so you don't often get that anymore. Like, you know, it wouldn't be just, yeah, it's just everything's been slightly tidied away, you know. So then you have one big, it's kind of that American influence. We have one big shop that sells nails and hammers and food. And
you get
then,
your casket on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. And you just sort of notice, oh yeah, we don't have that shop anymore. You know, like,
right.
Like, you know, the shop that sells just sewing machines and thread. And I feel like in Europe, they still have that kind of like, yeah, it comes from, the, I guess that sort of like, market town feel, and like it sounds like that's what's still happening. Like, yeah, there's a guy to do their flowers, there's a girl to do this, like,
yeah,
which I think here, I don't know because I haven't been to a Catholic funeral, but I think you wouldn't see that. It would all be sort of hidden away, and there's probably some company that's hired and they do the, they get the.
But I suppose a funeral home would do all of that,
do all of that, but you wouldn't see it. You'd be like, you just walk and you definitely put the soil on. Like, that's a very traditional thing, to, like, throw some soil on. Yeah. But I think, like, they wait for you to go before they, like, start taking their clothes off. I'm like, let's go, boys! Come on!
Bring a boombox.
Sergey, let's get digging. Yeah, that must have been so bizarre. Was there a lot of people at the funeral? Because, I mean, older people, it tends to be less people because all their friends have died.
It was very few. It was most. It was my grandfather and a bunch of my mom's like uni friends and so we went to a specially dedicated dining room because they have like a dining room that's got, it was called Pearl, and that Pearl dining room is like, it's for functions, but mostly because it's next to a cemetery, it's mostly, I mean, you could do your wedding there,
but it'd be like, a bold choice,
like a goth wedding maybe.
Oh wow, I see. So it's like,
so we went there. And there, like, everybody kind of talked, and all of their memories was about how she my grandmother hosted all the, like, all their uni parties at her at her house, at her lake house. Because in Russia, there's this culture of dacha.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, they have it in all of Eastern Europe, where you have this, like, patch of land outside the city. And that, I think it started in the Soviet times, where they were like, and on the weekend, you go to your dacha. And in the dacha, you grow your radishes and your potatoes.
Oh, wow.
And so my mom's, like, my grandmother's dacha was, like, the place to party. They would just go, like, get insanely wasted and jump in the lake.
Wow.
And so all of their memories were like, she was so cool about us getting totally wasted.
Galina. She knew how to party.
Yeah.
She was cool with it. God, that's so were you FaceTiming your mum at the wake? The wake is, the sort of meal
the
afterwards.
The wake, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. No. Like, it's not always called that, but, like, that's what we would probably call, like, the reception after. Was she still on the phone then? Were you having to sort of hold it up with her friends or?
Some of it.
God.
It was, because I have no idea how she felt at the time. It was just so odd because even while my grandmother was sick, it was just kind of like, just calling her and doing admin in a distance.
Yeah.
And she would know where we are the whole time.
Yeah.
But she would just be completely helpless. She felt completely trapped because she was in her house just being like, where are you now? Where are you now? Texting us like, and I think she called me. She's like, I feel like an orphan.
Mm.
Even though her dad's still alive and now he's moved to Germany to live with them.
Oh, that's,
Which is nice. But I mean, his health apparently deteriorated horribly after because his kind of whole life was taking care of her. And then when she wasn't there, he's quite lonely and just sad now. But yeah, the most heartbreaking parts of everything was my mom couldn't go. And she was just like, tell me everything. Tell me all the details. What did you eat? Who was there? What did they say? What is she wearing? What are photos? Like, every single moment. And a part of it is like, it's great that technology has gotten to that point, but a part of it just made it even so much more dystopian to send your mom pictures of dresses and be like, which one should we put on your dead mom? Do you know? Just like the admin of death being completely conducted on WhatsApp is just so bleak. Just like, what emoji do you use to be?
Yes, a sad face or crying face.
Yeah.
This is the thing with technology, and I have family that live abroad, and I think it's a bit of a lie because technology, of course, makes things easier. Of course it does. And you can speak to them and you can Skype people and you can FaceTime. And something about that makes you go, yeah, we're connected.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same.
Right.
It's not the same as being in a room with someone. It just isn't. Otherwise, we'd all be like, oh, let's, you know, being in a room with someone wouldn't feel so exciting. You know, we'd be like, oh, it's just the same as being on a computer. It's not. And so it somehow lulls you into, like you said, like, oh, I can be a part of it. I can help choose a dress. I can do these things. Mm-hmm. But really, I'm not a part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's being denied, that feeling of like, not, because we're sort of soothing it by going, no, look, you can see the house and you can see the funeral. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you're here, but you're not. And right. So whether if you'd lived in a world without that technology and she just wasn't able to be there, perhaps she'd be able perhaps you'd feel it better. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, like, I sometimes wonder how much it soothes that part of us that so desperately wants to be connected, but it doesn't really, it's like eating sugary food, you know, it doesn't doesn't really cut it. Sort of, you feel okay for a bit because you're like, oh, I have been involved, but not in a way that you ever want to.
I think that, and I think that exact feeling was something that contributing to her frustration.
Yeah.
And the thing that I mentioned in the beginning about being able to acknowledge and accept that she was dead, but not being able to accept the bureaucratic hurdle.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where up until that point, we kind of always viewed my dad as this martyr for a cause of kind of like, he opposed the government. What a hero. And yes, sure, they're living outside. Like, they can't go back to Russia, but like, they've left it heroically and like with a... Head held high. And she kind of... not kind of. She very much followed him. And there was, even though they didn't have any friends in Germany and they didn't have much to do, I think that kind of warmed them that they did the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the first ever real life consequence of my mother being so loyal to my dad.
Yeah.
And it was the first time my mom said, like, my dad just can't even look her in the eye in that time period where he finally saw the price she had to pay for, like, his shenanigans, for his
beliefs.
Yes. I mean, you say beliefs, I say shenanigans. But, and it, that's not to say that what he did was wrong, but it was really sobering. And I think for the first time, she really realized what price she paid. It wasn't that she didn't get to see her friends that often, or she didn't get to, like, I don't know, go to her favorite places in St. Petersburg, or speak the same language, her language, in a shop. These are kind of superficial cosmetic sacrifices, I suppose. But this was the first ever where it was just a real life price that they paid for this thing. Sorry.
No, I'm just taking it in because I just think, that's the thing of, like, there's no right or wrong. It's just consequences. I always hold that in my head of, like, it's just like, you just have to live with the consequence, and that obviously there are right and wrong morally, but like the right and wrong decision to leave Russia at this very difficult time to stand up what you believe in. Of course, everyone's like, yeah, good, good for you. Absolutely. And I think, I wonder if it's sometimes good to remember why people don't stand up, I suppose. Kind of like you said, like that personal sacrifice is huge, that she wasn't there to be when her mum died. Like, that must have been and still be heartbreaking for her, like really, really, really hard. And God, I can imagine for him, like, that's awkward. It's like, why are we in Germany again? Oh, it's my fault, isn't it? It's definitely, like, there's no like, oh, well, we both wanted to come. It's like, nope, definitely your decision, isn't it? Like, and I'm following you. That's so hard. Did they get to speak? Did your grandma get to speak to your mum about her not being there? Did they, were they able to have that conversation? Or
yes. So they talked on the phone and they FaceTimed a bit, or was it, while she was at the hospital. Yeah, she was, like, up until, like, that last week, she was just, I think, I mean, obviously, in retrospect, you kind of remember those conversations and you assign meaning to them that wasn't there at the time and you interpret them in a certain way. But she did seem kind of euphoric. She just kept, like, we were all around her and she kept describing this dinner party that we're going to have. And we're going to have a dinner party and you're going to be there and your kids are going to be there. And she kept looking at my sister and she's like, and you are going to be there and your kids are going to be there and your ex-husband is going to be there. We're going to invite him too, even though they're not together anymore. And she was just like, and we're going to have a wonderful, and everybody's going to laugh. And she just kept describing this dinner party and her memory was a bit off. So she, like, every day we'd visit her, she'd describe the same dinner party. Oh. And it was this euphoria. She kept smiling, thinking about this dinner party.
That's so nice, isn't it? That's so, like, what else would anybody want but to be convinced you're having a dinner, like, with all your family? Like, great. That sounds so nice.
It's also, like, a modest desire.
Yeah.
Like, a dream of, like, I just want to have dinner with you guys.
With everybody around the table. Yeah. Even your ex-husband.
Yeah. Because I think she hadn't had that for such a long time because...
Yeah.
Not a long time, 4 or 5 years, because my parents were out. So she was never... We couldn't have a family gathering because we live in 3 different countries and we can't physically be together in the same
way. Yeah, and that's, like we said, this idea of technology, like, it's great, you can communicate, but to all sat around a table is like what all of us kind of want, isn't it? That idea. I know I used to, remember that game where people would be like, who would be your dream dinner party guest if you can have anyone living or dead? And I remember I used to always be like, my dad. And it would really kill the party vibe. Because everyone else had been like, Nelson Mandela, Jerry from the Spice Girls. And I was just like, my dad and my grandpa. Like, just instantly, like, if I could have anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, the family that aren't here. That's it. That would be amazing. I don't need to I don't hang out with them. I mean, sure, they're very complicated people. Like, I admire them from afar. I didn't just sit down with them. Yeah, oh, bless her. So were you with her when she died?
No. Yeah. So I arrived the day after. So I visited her, then I left back to London thinking that after the operation she's going to be fine.
Aww.
And then I came back and she wasn't fine.
I mean, yeah, you have to go back. Like, you know, you just, who knows? Mm-hmm. Like you said, if you think it's just an operation, you think, oh, okay, things are happening, it's okay. So when you were FaceTiming your mum, what happened? Like, how did
a crazy send.
Yeah, I know, at your grandma's funeral. What, like, was there a point that you had to kind of go, okay, I have to, it's over? Like, did you sort of have to say to her, okay, it's done? Like, or was she just texting you like, okay, and you're like, yeah, everyone's gone home? Like, I wonder how you finished that, kind of like, okay, this is now finished. And
It wasn't that, it was one continuous call. We just kept calling her for new location. So after the I'm not trying to join you anytime soon gag, we're like, okay, we're going to go. And so I think we called her again from the wake. In the moment, you don't think that they're like big pompous moments. You only remember those in retrospect. So in the moment, it was a lot of admin of she's like, oh, fewer people showed up than we thought. We have all this remaining food. And we, like, my sister was just deciding with her what we're going to do with all this food.
Yeah.
And then we took some of the food home to feed my granddad throughout the week. Yeah, it was quite admin-y.
Yeah.
And I think, if anything, my mom was overdoing the admin just because she wanted to feel useful.
Be useful, yeah. Like, I'm helpful. I'm, even though I'm not there, I can advise and do
stuff. She's like, this person will drive you there. This is who's picking up you from the airport. Yeah. And just...
It must be so hard for her. Like, I can't imagine. I can't imagine how it must feel to not be, like you said, for that bureaucratic reason, not to be. And there's no way, it's not safe. She can't even... Yeah, she can't come back. It's just, that must be so hard. That must be so fucking hard. Did she have a say on, like, the burial and is there a gravestone? Is that how it works in Russia?
Yeah. All of the admin, all of the details, she obviously had a say in. But it's interesting, because, like, talking to her about it, in a way, nothing in her life has changed because her life is like waking up in Germany, eating in Germany, and driving in Germany. So all of those, that hasn't changed. So it's a huge exercise for just your like imagination to be like that thing you're imagining, that person you imagined living in St. Petersburg, even though you didn't see St. Petersburg, you didn't see them existing in St. Petersburg, like going to the bathroom or whatever. So it's just something that she has to shift in her imagination.
Yeah. It's really hard.
And I don't know if she's successfully done it. I don't know how she does it. I don't know.
Well, it's so early as well. Like you said, it only happened last year. So it's like, it's going to take a long time to process grieving in another country. And also, I guess she must be, I mean, I'm psychoanalyzing your mother here, but like, you know, you're grieving for the life you lost anyway. Yeah. And all of that, like leaving a country that doesn't exist anymore for you. Mm-hmm. And so all of that is wrapped up in, and then a person who is no longer there. That's like your past is like literally a door is closed on your past and gone. Well, that's it. It's just, and I think that's the thing of sometimes we don't, the power of a country, like what it means to people. And I think sometimes we're so, especially, you know, the English press was like, this can be so flippant about like what's happening in people's lives, or like when we talk about refugee or migrant or political statuses, it's like, oh, well, they wanted to leave. And it's like, well, that the pain that it comes from leaving where you were born, like, it's just, I think that's a grief that we don't really acknowledge, because I think a lot of people haven't experienced it. You know, to be a political asylum is not an everyday occurrence. So, it must be really, really hard. And I think the language thing is interesting as well, because you're just not being able to speak your language in the language that you process feelings in, I think is interesting. I know someone who had therapy in a different language, and I found that really, I was like, ooh, like, can you get to the nub of things if you're doing it in a different language? Like,
really good point.
Yeah, like if you have to go to counselling, does she have to find Russian bereavement? Like, can you find
that? And then in that moment, will she have to Skype them too?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we slag it off, but it's actually really useful, guys. The technology is amazing. So how did you feel when you came back to England then? Mm-hmm. And how did you feel? Because you don't live there either and haven't lived there. How does your relationship feel with that country?
That's a really, really good question. Just because I don't feel like anywhere is really home. And it's not in a, like, oh, boo-hoo. In a way that that's just not something that I don't ever think about. Like, a lot of people will ask me, like, what nationality do I identify as? But no one wakes up thinking, like, I'm waking up on this British morning, drinking this British tea, and drinking in this British air. Like, no one ever, you never think about your national identity until you're forced to define it in a question. So I don't think that's not, I have really mixed feelings about Russia in terms of, like, it doesn't feel like home, but it does feel like a component of my identity.
Yeah, I think that's a good sentence. Like, because of course, like, to deny it as part of your identity, like, of course it is. If that's, like you said, the mother tongue, and like the reason we call it the mother tongue, like, it's part of you, it created you.
Yeah. And also, I think I have that, everyone has like a morbid curiosity about the Soviet Union. Just because it's like, oh, it was a closed country and all this stuff. And it's like a very kind of like a podcasty Chernobyl kind of like.
Oh, yeah, it's so romantic and confusing and interesting, yeah.
So I feel that. And I don't know where the line is between thinking about your past that way or thinking about just like in culture, it's such a huge mystery that you are drawn to it inevitably the same way you're drawn towards like kind of being curious about North Korea or being curious about Cuba. And so I definitely feel that. And I think there is an excitement to being like, oh, well, I not only am I curious about it, I also have like my own stake because my parents lived through it, my grandparents lived through it. And writing a show about my parents and like the fall of the Soviet Union, which I did last year, it was equal parts, I think, oh, this is such a cool time.
Yeah.
And then the second part being like, oh, I get to have an authority to talk about this time because I kind of like I'm a little bit related to this time.
Yeah, definitely. Of course. And like, how do you feel moving forward about it? Like, do you feel with your grief, because obviously you're grieving your grandma, but I suppose has she always lived far away because you haven't lived in Russia for such a long time? So do you feel like you're talking about your mom about that imagination? Is that kind of what you're having to do as well? Like, your life here is the same and it's not changing. No one knew Galina in that way.
Yes, I think so. It is a shift in my imagination. I also think, because I from 13, I've been living away from my family. So my family is very much the way that I described everything that happened in 2014, me just dialing into it whenever I wanted to or felt like it. It was happening mostly in my imagination in a parallel universe where it absolutely didn't really affect my everyday life. But on top of that, because I wrote this show about the Soviet Union and Russia in the past year, I feel like Galina was so much more fresh in my mind and so much top of mind comparing to, let's say, 5 years ago, I was at university drinking and getting fingered. And so it was quite cathartic for it to be at the end of this year that I spent so much of my life from 13 to about 25 denying being Russian, pretending I was German, pretending I had nothing to do with Russia, pretending not to speak Russian. I refused to read Russian books for ages just because I was so embarrassed of being Russian. And then this past year has been so much about me reclaiming Russia as part of my identity. And then at the end of this year, her passing away just did feel like it meant more than it would have 2 or 3 years ago.
I don't know if that makes sense. Yeah, no, totally, because you've come full circle on that identity. And it's funny because we were talking about this at the beginning that, you know, like, I'm not from Wales at all. And to be fair, like, my family didn't speak Welsh, but I get so funny around Welsh people. And I know what you mean about feeling like, ooh, that's where my people come from. And I always say, like, oh, you know, the motherland and my people. And my husband's always like, oh, what, North London? And I'm like, no, my people. And it's, I think sometimes we underestimate the power of that. Like, it makes, you want to acknowledge that, I think, is a journey of maturity in a way. Like, I definitely had that when I was younger. I was so embarrassed of my name. I was so stupid. Oh, my God. Oh my God, Carrie Ad is so stupid and weird. And you know, like, and it's just embarrassing. And I remember my brother and me used to think that Gwyneth was the worst name we'd ever heard. And I don't think we had a relative called Gwyneth, but like, we thought it was the funniest. And that was our insult. Like, Gwyneth. Your name's Gwyneth. And I remember when Gwyneth Paltrow came along and we were like, what?
A cool Gwyneth.
Why is she how is she called that name? And she's not embarrassed. Have you seen? She's just out there being a movie star. What?
And living as Gwyneth.
Yeah. And then you kind of go, like you said, that thing about your where you come from or your culture. And it's not 100% of a culture, of course not. Yeah. Like, you're hugely influenced by where you are and as a teenager. But you start going, oh, maybe it's not so embarrassing where I come from. Maybe it's okay where I came from. I think it's really nice that
that Glina was still there when you came to that realization. Did she know you were doing a show kind of about Russia?
I think a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if she fully understood how everything was working. I think for her, the hurdle of, I'm sorry, my granddaughter lives in London was like huge enough. Like for a person whose whole life she couldn't go abroad, for someone in her family not only going abroad, but also like living there.
I'm just going to go and live there.
Yeah. I think that was more of like an explosion than anything I did at the Edinburgh Fringe.
She was still recovering. Yeah. She lives there. Like, yeah, but she's doing really well in Edinburgh. No, I'm still dealing that she lives there. She can just go on a plane. You can't get your head around like that world at all. Like it's, because even like with my grandparents, obviously there's a world that I'm like, oh, God, you know, my grandpa born in World War II and captured by the Japanese and all this stuff. Like, yeah, you know, this is whole crazy world. But like to grow up in communist world, like it must just seem like everyone's walking around in moon boots and like on like hoverboards.
That's me, that's me being like, I'm doing a show on the moon. Yeah. She's like, where?
Of course you are. You live in London. Like, of course. Oh, well, she sounds like a badass lady.
Yeah, she was really, really cool.
I hope she wouldn't mind me describing her like that.
Oh, I'm sure she'd love it.
Yeah, she
wouldn't understand.
Yeah, she wouldn't understand. What would you describe in Russian? What's like a way of being like, she's in Russian, like she, that lady's like badass. Is there a word? Or like super cool? What would you say? Is there like, I suppose it's such an American term.
It's super cool. Because if you translated literally super cool, it's like you describe like a glittery gel pen.
I do not want to do that to Galina. Yeah, what would it have to be in Russian? Would it have to be much more like serious? Of, like,
yeah,
I think she is
so.
An intelligent,
an accomplished lady.
Accomplished lady. What would you say? How would you say that in Russian?
How should we say the word молодец?
Oh yeah, what, so that means like accomplished, right?
You're just great.
Just great.
Молодец.
Молодец. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, it's okay. Great. It's great.
She sounds молодец. She sounds amazing. She sounds amazing. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having
her.
Me. Thank you for listening to me.
You can follow Olga on Twitter at rockandrolga. And her show if/then is going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe this year at Monkey Barrel Comedy at 4:30. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And the music is provided by The Glue Ensemble. I'm very tired. It's very hot. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.